Chapter 7. While the two boys were whispering behind, both of the girls suddenly cried, "Oh!" and they stopped. "The robin," cried Lucy, "the robin, it's flown away." And so it had, right out of sight. "And now what do we do?" Edmund asked, giving Peter a look which was as much as to say, "Well, did I tell you or did I tell you?" "Shh, look," said Susan. "What?" Peter asked. "There's something moving among the trees over there to the left." They all stared as hard as they could. No one felt very comfortable. "There it goes again," said Susan presently.
"I saw it that time too," said Peter.
"It's still there. It's just gone behind that big tree."
"What is it?" Lucy asked, trying very hard not to sound too nervous.
"Whatever it is," said Peter, "it's dodging us. It's something that doesn't want to be seen."
"Well, let's go home," said Susan. And then, though nobody said it out loud, everyone suddenly realized the same fact that Edmund had whispered to Peter at the end of the last chapter. They were lost.
What's it like?" Lucy asked.
It's a kind of animal," said Susan.
And then she said, look, quick, there it is."
They all saw it this time, a whiskered, furry face, which had looked out from behind a tree. But this time, it didn't immediately draw back. Instead, the animal put its paw against its mouth, just as humans put their fingers to their lips when they're signaling you to be quiet. Then it disappeared again. The children all stood, holding their breath. A moment later, the stranger came out from behind the tree, glancing all around as if it were afraid someone was watching, and said, "Hush," made signs to them to join it in the thicker bit of the wood where it was standing, and then once again disappeared.
"I know what it was," Peter said. "It's a beaver. I saw the tail."
"It wants us to go with it," Susan said, "and it is warning us not to make a noise."
"I know," said Peter. "The question is, are we going to or not? What do you think, Lou?"
"I think it's a nice beaver," Lucy said.
"Yes, but how do we know?" said Edmund.
"Shan't we have to risk it?" Susan said. "I mean, it's no good just standing here, and I feel I want some dinner."
At this moment, the beaver again popped its head out from behind the tree and beckoned earnestly to them.
"Come on," said Peter, "let's give it a try. All keep close together. We ought to be a match for one beaver if it turns out to be an enemy." So the children all got close together and walked up to the tree and then behind it. Sure enough, they found the beaver. But it still drew back, saying to them in a hoarse, throaty whisper, "Further in, come further in, right in here. We're not safe out in the open." Only when it had led them to a dark spot where four trees grew so close together that their boughs met and the brown earth and pine needles could be seen underfoot because no snow had been able to fall there, and did they all begin to talk.
"Are you the sons of Adam and the daughters of Eve?" it said.
"Where are some of them?" said Peter.
"Shh," said the beaver. "Not so loud, please. We're not even safe here."
"Why, who are you afraid of?" said Peter. "There's no one here but ourselves."
"There are the trees," said the beaver. "They're always listening. Most of them are on our side, but there are trees that would betray us to her. You know who I mean," it said, nodding its head several times.
"If it comes to talking about sides," said Edmund, "how do we know you're a friend?"
"Not meaning to be rude, Mr. Beaver," added Peter, "but you see we're strangers."
Quite right, said the beaver. "Here is my token." With those words, it held up to them a little white object. They all looked at it in surprise, till suddenly Lucy said,
"Oh, of course, it's my handkerchief, the one I gave to poor Mr. Tumnus."
"That's right," said the beaver. "Poor fellow, he got one to the rest before it actually happened, and handed this over to me. He said that if anything happened to him, I must meet you here and take you on to..." Here the beaver's voice sank to silence, and it gave one or two very mysterious nods. Then, signaling to the children to stand as close around it as they possibly could, so that their faces were actually tickled by its whispers, it added in a low whisper, "They say Aslan is on the move, perhaps has already landed." And now a very curious thing happened. None of the children knew who Aslan was any more than you do. But the moment the beaver had spoken those words, everyone felt quite different. Perhaps it has sometimes happened to you in a dream that someone says something which you don't understand, but in the dream it feels as if it had some enormous meaning, either a terrifying one which turns the whole dream into a nightmare, or else a lovely meaning, too lovely to put into words, which makes the dream so beautiful that you remember it all your life and are always wishing you could get into that dream again. It was like that now. At the name of Aslan, each one of the children felt something jump in its insides. Edmund felt a sensation of mysterious horror. Peter felt something brave and adventurous. Susan felt as if some delicious smell or some delightful strain of music had just floated by her. Lucy got the feeling that you have when you wake up in the morning and realize that it's the beginning of the holidays or the beginning of summer. "And what about Mr. Tumnus?" said Lucy. "Where is he?" "Shh," said the beaver. "Not here. I must bring you where we can have a real talk and also dinner." No one except Edmund felt any difficulty about trusting the beaver now, and everyone, including Edmund, was glad to hear the word dinner. They therefore all hurried along behind their new friend, who led them at a surprisingly quick pace, and always in the thickest part of the forest, for over an hour. Everyone was feeling very tired and very hungry when suddenly the trees began to get thinner in front of them, and the ground began to fall steeply downward. A minute later, they came out under the open sky, the sun was still shining at that point, and found themselves looking down on a fine sight. They were standing on the edge of a steep, narrow valley at the bottom of which ran, at least it would have been running if it hadn't been frozen, a fairly large river. Just below them, a dam had been built across the river, and when they saw it, everyone suddenly remembered that, of course, beavers are always making dams, and felt quite sure that Mr. Beaver had made this one. They also noticed that he now had a sort of modest expression on his face, the sort of look people have when you are visiting a garden they've made or reading a story they've written. So it was only common politeness when Susan said, "What a lovely dam," and Mr. Beaver didn't say "hush" this time, but merely a trifle, and it isn't really finished. Above the dam there was what ought to have been a deep pool, but was now, of course, a level floor of dark green ice. And below the dam, much lower down, was more ice, but instead of being smooth, this was all frozen into the foamy and wavy shapes in which the water had been rushing along at the very moment when the frost came. Where the water had been trickling over and spurting through the dam, there was now a glistening wall of icicles, as if that side of the dam had been covered all over with flowers and wreaths and festoons of the purest sugar. Out in the middle, and partly on top of the dam, was a funny little house, shaped rather like an enormous beehive, and from a hole in the roof, smoke was going up so that you saw it, especially if you were hungry. You at once thought of cooking and became hungrier than you ever were before. That was what the others chiefly noticed, but Edmund noticed something else. A little lower down the river, there was another small river which came down another small valley to join them. Looking up that valley, Edmund could see two small hills, and he was almost sure they were the two hills which the White Witch had pointed out to him when he parted from her at the lamppost the other day. And then between them, he thought, must be her palace, only a mile or off or less. He thought about that, the Turkish delight, and about being king. And I wonder how Peter would like that, he asked himself. And then the other horrible ideas came into his head. Here we are, said Mr. Beaver, and it looks as if Mrs. Beaver is expecting us. I'll lead the way, but be careful and don't slip. The top of the dam was wide enough to walk on, though not, for humans, a very nice place to walk, because it was covered with ice, and though the frozen pool was level with it on one side, there was still a nasty drop to the lower level on the other. Along this route, Mr. Beaver led them in single file right out to the middle, where they could look a long way up the river and a long way down it. and when they had reached the mill, they were at the door of the house. "Here we are, Mrs. Beaver," said Mr. Beaver. "I found them. Here are the sons and daughters of Adam and Eve," and they all went in. The first thing Lucy noticed as she went in was a burring sound, and the first thing she saw was a kind-looking old she-beaver sitting in the corner with a thread in her mouth working busily at her sewing machine, and it was from it that the sound came. She stopped her work and got up as soon as the children came in. "So you've come at last," she said, holding out both of her wrinkled old paws. "At last, to think that I should live to see this day. The potatoes are boiling and the kettle's singing, and I dare say, Mr. Beaver, you'll get us some fish." "That I will," said Mr. Beaver, and he went out of the house. Peter went with him, and across the ice of the deep pool to where he had a little hole in the ice, which he kept open every day with his hatchet. They took a pail with them, and Mr. Beaver sat down quietly on the edge of the hole. He didn't seem to mind it being so chilly. Looked hard into it, and then suddenly shot in his paw, and before you could say Jack Robinson, had whisked out a beautiful trout. Then he did it all over again until they had a fine catch of fish. Meanwhile, the girls were helping Mrs. Beaver to fill the kettle and lay the table, cut the bread and put it on the plates in the oven to heat, and draw a huge jug of beer for Mr. Beaver from the barrel which stood in one corner of the house, and to put it on the frying pan and get the drippings hot. Lucy thought the beavers had a very snug little home, though it was not at all like Mr. Thomas's cave. There were no books or pictures. Instead of beds, there were bunks, like on board a ship, built into the wall. And there were hams and strings of onions hanging from the roof, and against the wall there were gumboat boots and oilskins and hatchets and pairs of shears and spades and trowels and things for carrying water in, and fishing rods and fishing nets and sacks. The cloth on the table, though very clean, was very rough. Just as the frying pan was nicely hissing, Peter and Mr. Beaver came in with the fish, which Mr. Beaver had already opened with his knife and cleaned out in the open air. You can think of how good the newly caught fish smelled while they were frying, and how hungry the children longed for them to be done, and how very much hungrier they had become before Mr. Beaver said, "Now we're nearly ready." Susan drained the potatoes and then put them back into the empty pot to dry on the side of the range, while Lucy was helping Mrs. Beaver to dish up the trout, so that in a few minutes everyone was drying up to their stools. It was all three-legged stools in the Beaver's house, except for Mrs. Beaver's own special rocking chair beside the fire, and they were preparing themselves for a fine meal. There was a jug of creamy milk for the children. Mr. Beaver stuck to the beer, and a great big lump of deep yellow butter in the middle of the table, from which everyone took as much as they wanted to go with their potatoes. And all the children thought, and I agree with them, that there's nothing to beat good freshwater fish if you eat it when it has been alive half an hour ago and has come out of the pail half a minute ago. When they had all finished the fish, Mrs. Beaver brought unexpectedly out of the oven a great and gloriously sticky marmalade roll, steaming hot, and at the same time moved the kettle onto the fire so that they had finished the marmalade roll, the tea was made and ready to be poured out. When each person had gotten his or her cup of tea, each person shoved back his or her stool so that as to be able to lean against the wall and to give a long sigh of contentment. "Now," said Mr. Beaver, pushing away his empty beer mug and pulling his cup of tea toward him, "if you'll just wait till I've got my pipe lit up and going nicely, why, now we can get to business." "It's now snowing again," he nodded, cocking his eyes at the window. "And that's all the better, because it means we shan't have any visitors. And if anyone should have been trying to follow you, why, he won't be able to find any tracks." Chapter 8. "And now," said Lucy, "do please tell us what happened to Mr. Tumnus." "Oh, that's bad," said Mr. Beaver, shaking his head. "That's a very, very bad business. There's no doubt he was taken off by the police. I got that from a bird who saw it done." "But where was he taken to?" asked Lucy. "Well, they were heading northward when they were last seen, and we all know what that means." "No, we don't," said Susan.
Mr. Beaver shook his head in a very gloomy fashion. "I'm afraid it means they were taking him to her house," he said. "But what'll they do to him, Mr. Beaver?" gasped Lucy. "Well," said Mr. Beaver, "we can't exactly say for sure, but there's not many taken in there that's ever come out again. Statues. All full of statues they are, they say, in a courtyard and up the stairs and in the hall. It all people she's turned." He paused and shuddered. "Turned into stone." "But, Mr. Beaver," said Lucy, "can't we? I mean, we must do something to save him. It's too dreadful, and it's all on my account." "I don't doubt you'd save him if you could, dearie," said Mrs. Beaver. "But you've no chance of getting into that house against her will and ever coming out alive." "Couldn't we have some stratagem?" said Peter. "I mean, couldn't we dress up as something or pretend to be a peddlers or something? Anything. Watch till she was gone out, or hang it all, there must be some way. This Fawn saved my sister at his own risk, Mr. Beaver. We can't just leave him to have that done to him." "It's no good, son of Adam," said Mr. Beaver. "No good you're trying, of all people. But now that Aslan is on the move..." "Oh, yes, do tell us about Aslan," said several voices all at once. For once again, that strange feeling, like the first signs of spring, like good news, had come over them. "Who's Aslan?" asked Susan. "Aslan?" said Mr. Beaver. "Why, don't you know? He's the king. He's the lord of the whole wood. But not often here, you understand. Never in my time, or your father's time. But word has reached us, that he's come back. He is in Narnia at this very moment. He'll settle the White Queen, all right. It is he, not you, that will save Mr. Tumnus." "She won't turn him into stone, too?" Edmund asked. "Oh, Lord, say it, love you, son of Adam. What a simple thing to say," answered Mr. Beaver with a great laugh. "Turn him into stone? If she can stand on her own 2 feet and look him in the face, it'll be the most she can do, and more than I expect of her. No, he'll put all to rights, as it says in the old rhyme in these parts. Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death, and when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. You'll understand when you see him." "But shall we see him?" asked Susan. "Why, daughter of Eve, that's why I brought you here for. I'm to lead you where you shall meet him," said Mr. Beaver. Is he a man?" asked Lucy. "Aslan a man?" said Mr. Beaver sternly. "Certainly not. I tell you he is the king of the wood and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who's the king of beasts? Aslan is a lion. The lion. The great lion." "Oh," said Susan. "I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion." "That you will, dearie, and no mistake," said Mr. Beaver. "Mrs. Beaver, if there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or just plain silly." "Then he isn't safe?" said Lucy. "Safe," said Mr. Beaver. "Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you." "I'm longing to see him," said Peter, "even if I do feel frightened when it comes to the point." "That's right, son of Adam," said Mr. Beaver, bringing his paw down on the table with a crash that made all the cups and saucers rattle. "And so you shall. Word has been sent that you are to meet him tomorrow, if you can, at the stone table." "Where's that?" Lucy asked. "I'll show you," said Mr. Beaver. "It's down the river, a good step from here. I'll take you to it." "But meanwhile, what about poor Mr. Tumnus?" Lucy asked again. "The quickest way you can help him is by going to meet Aslan," said Mr. Beaver. "Once he's with us, then we can begin doing things. Not that we don't need you, too. Well, that's another of the old rhymes.
When Adam's flesh and Adam's bone sits at Cair Paravellum throne, the evil time will be over and done. So things must be drawing near their end. Now he's come and you've come. We've heard of Aslan's coming into these parts before, long ago. Nobody can say exactly when. But there's never been any of your race here before. That's what I don't understand, Mr. Beaver, said Peter. I mean, isn't the witch herself human? She's like us. She'd like us to believe it, said Mr. Beaver. And it's on that she bases her claim to be queen. But she's no daughter of Eve. She comes of your father's Adams, said Mr. Beaver bowed. Your father, Adam's first wife, her they call Lilith. And she was one of the djinn. That's what she comes from on one side. And on the other, she comes of the giants. No, no, there isn't a drop of real human blood in the witch. That's why she's bad all through, Mr. Beaver, said Mrs. Beaver. True enough, Mrs. Beaver, he replied. There may be two views about humans, meaning no offense to the present company, but there's no two views about things that look like humans and aren't. I've known good doors, said Mrs. Beaver. So have I. Now you come to speak of it, said her husband, but very precious few, and they were the ones least like men. But in general, take my advice. When you meet anything that's going to be human and yet isn't, or used to be human once and isn't now, or ought to be human and isn't, you keep your eyes on it and feel for your hatchet. And that's why the witch is always on the lookout for any humans in Narnia. She's been watching for you for many years, many times. And if she knew there were four of you, she'd be more dangerous still. What's that got to do with anything? Peter asked. Because of another prophecy, said Mr. Beaver. Down in Cair Paravellum, that's the castle on the seacoast down at the mouth of this river, which ought to be the capital of the country, if all was as it should be. Down at Cair Paravellum, there are four thrones, and it's a saying in Narnia that time out of mind, that when two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve sit on these four thrones, then it will be the end, not only of the White Witch's reign, but of her life. And that is why we had to be so cautious as we came along, for if she knew about you four, your lives wouldn't be worth a shake of my whiskers. All the children had been attending so hard to what Mr. Beaver was telling them that they had not noticed anything else for a very long time. Then, during the moment of silence that followed his last remark, Lucy said sudden-like, "I say, where's Edmund?" There was a dreadful pause, and then everyone began asking, "Who saw him last? How long has he been missing? Is he outside?" And then they all rushed out the door and looked out. The snow was falling thick and steadily. The green ice off the pool had vanished under a thick white blanket, and from where the little house stood in the center of the dam, you could hardly see either bank. Out they went, pushing, plunging through well over to the above their ankles in the soft new snow, and went around the house in every direction. "Edmund! Edmund!" they called till they were all hoarse. But the silently falling snow seemed to muffle their voices, and there was not even an echo in answer. "How perfectly dreadful," said Susan, as they at last came back in despair. "Oh, how I wish we'd never come." "What on earth are we to do, Mr. Beaver?" asked Peter. "Do," said Mr. Beaver, who was already putting on his snow boots. "Do? We must be off at once. We haven't a moment to spare." "We'd better divide into four search parties," said Peter, "and all go in different directions. Whoever finds them must come back here at once." "And search party, son of Adam," said Mr. Beaver. "Whatever for?" "Why, to look for Edmund, of course." "There's no point in looking for him," said Mr. Beaver. "What do you mean?" said Susan. "He can't be far away yet, and we've got to find him. What do you mean when you say there's no use looking for him?"
"The reason there's no use looking," said Mr. Beaver, "is that we know already where he's gone." Everyone stared at him in amazement. "Don't you understand?" said Mr. Beaver. "He's gone to her, to the White Witch. He's betrayed us all."
"Oh, surely, really," said Susan. "He can't have done that."
"Can't he?" said Mr. Beaver, looking very hard at all three children. and everything they wanted to say died on their lips, for each felt suddenly quite certain inside that this was exactly what Edmund had done. "But will he know the way?" said Peter. "Has he been in this country before?" asked Mr. Beaver. "Has he ever been here alone?" "Yes," said Lucy, almost in a whisper. "I'm afraid he has." "And did he tell you that what he'd done or who he met?" "Well, no, he didn't," said Lucy. "Then mark my words," said Mr. Beaver. "He has already met the White Witch and joined her side and been told exactly where she lives. I didn't like to mention it before, he being your brother and all, but the moment I set eyes on that brother of yours, I said to myself, treacherous. He had the look of one who has been with the witch and eaten her food. You can always tell them if you've lived long enough in Narnia, it's something about their eyes." "All the same," said Peter in a rather choking sort of voice, "we still have to go and look for him. He's our brother after all, even if he is rather a little beast. And he's only a kid." "Go to the White Witch's house?" said Mr. Beaver. "Don't you see the only chance of saving either him or yourselves is to keep away from her?" "How do you mean?" said Lucy. "Why, all she wants is to get all four of you." She's thinking all the time of those four thrones that care for her well. "Once you are all four inside her house, her job would be done, and there'd be four new statues in her collection before you'd had time to speak. But she'll keep him alive as long as he's the only one she's got, because she'll want to use him as a decoy, as bait, to catch the rest of you." "Oh, can no one help us?" wailed Lucy. "Only Aslan," said Mr. Beaver. "We must go and meet him. That's our only chance right now." "It seems to me, my dear," said Mrs. Beaver, "that it is very important to know just when he slipped away. How much can he tell her depends on how much he heard. For instance, had we started talking of Aslan before he left? If not, then we may do very well, for she won't know that Aslan has come to Narnia, or that we are meeting him, and will be quite off her guard as far as that is concerned." "I don't remember his being here when we were talking about Aslan," began Peter, but Lucy interrupted him. "Oh, yes, he was," she said miserably. "Don't you remember? He was the one who asked whether the witch couldn't turn Aslan into stone, too." "So he did, by Jove," said Peter. "Just the sort of thing he would say, too." "Worse and worse," said Mr. Beaver. "And the next thing is this. Was he still here when I told you that the place for meeting Aslan was the stone table?" Of course, no one knew the answer to that question. "Because if he was," continued Mr. Beaver, "then she'll simply sled down in that direction and get between us and the stone table and catch us on our way down. In fact, we shall be cut off from Aslan." "But that isn't what she'll do first," said Mrs. Beaver. "Not if I know her. The moment that Edmund tells her that we're all here, she'll set out to catch us this very night. And if he's been gone about half an hour, she'll be here in another 20 minutes. "You're right, Mrs. Beaver," said her husband. "We must all get away from here. There's not a moment to lose."